We are really glad that you are here with us today, whether you're in the room, whether you're online. So glad that you decided to spend your Father's Day with us. So first off, let me say happy Father's Day to all the dads in the room. It is a special day for all of us. Now, I'm really excited to be here with y'all today because normally on a Sunday, I'm hanging out over in Upstreet. That's where I normally am. So if I've seen you around Upstreet, maybe you serve in there, you bring your kids in there. First off, let me say, hey, good to see you again. Yeah, it's awesome. For those of you that I've never met before, I thought I'd give you a little bit of a glimpse into my world. My name is Matt Hayes. I do serve as our Upstreet director. And I thought I'd show you, this is my family. So this is me. This is my wife, Larson, my beautiful wife. We just celebrated our 7th anniversary this past week. Yes, she still likes me. I think. I hope. And these are our three beautiful kids. This is Bowen, our son, who's almost 5. This is our daughter, Charlotte, who's 3 and is trying so hard to smile. She's like, I'm going to get it out. And then our baby girl, Gwen, who is 1. Now, I love that we're talking about heroes in this series, this whole idea that everybody can be a hero. Because for me, the people that I most want to be a hero for is them. I want to be a hero for my wife. I want to be a hero for my kids. And see, I would bet that every single one of us in the room, we would say that the people we want to be a hero for are our loved ones. It's the people we love. It's our spouses. It's our children. It's our parents. It's our friends. Those that mean the world to us, we want to be a hero for them. Now, I also love that we get to talk about heroes because every single Sunday when I'm normally in Upstreet, we talk about heroes a lot. So every Sunday, I'm a little bit biased, but I'm just going to go ahead and say the most fun in this entire building happens in Upstreet. So if you've never been in there, you are totally missing out. Kids come in every week. They get to hang out around other boys and girls their age. They get to connect to an incredible Upstreet volunteer because we have the best ones in the world. They get to sing some songs together, have some activities, play some games. And every single week, they get to listen to a Bible story. And now I just also want to say, if you're looking for a place to like jump in, there's no better place to join than Upstreet. So all you got to do, go right over to the gallery after the service and say, hey, this guy Matt sent me. He's got a beard. They'll know where to put you. It'll be great. We'd love for you to join in because what we do in Upstreet's awesome. We talk about heroes a lot. We tell them about a hero in the Bible every single week. We tell them about Samson, the strongest man who ever lived. Or we talk to them about the leader of the Israelite army named Joshua. We tell them about the man who led all the Israelites out of slavery named Moses, or perhaps my personal favorite, the Goliath slayer, David, King David. And see, what happens is every time we say this to these kids, every time we teach them about heroes, it's awesome because you watch their faces light up. And then you say, how many of you want to be a hero? And they go, oh, me, I'm going to be a hero one day. I'm going to slay a Goliath just like he did. And you're like, whoa, calm down in the anger. We don't need to do that. But they think that one day they're going to be heroes. They know that there's something in their future that's so bright and that they can go live that out. So I'm really excited to be here because something I see so often is that for a lot of us, we trade these magical dreams from when we're in Upstreet to this mundane reality as life starts to happen. And no longer do we think like a kid in Upstreet, well, one day I'm going to be a hero. Now we really just reserve that title hero for other people. We say that others can be heroes, those that have more power than us, those that have more talent than us, those that have more significance, those with more money or a better opportunity, those with more bravery or more courage. We have heroes in our lives. And I know this to be true because I have them as well. Right now, you could probably think of a hero in your life, whether it's a parent, it's a friend, it's a mentor, someone older than you. For me, I think about someone named Kevin Queen. Kevin Queen's a mentor of mine, and he is one of my heroes. Now, a little bit about Kevin. Kevin's about 10 years older than me, so being older always typically helps. His little brother is like my best man, and I've known him since elementary school. So Kevin is basically like my big brother. And through college, Kevin would continue to kind of mentor me and breathe life into me. And then coming out of college, he said, Matt, why don't you come work for me? So now is not only Kevin my big brother, but now he's big boss man. And if you have ever had a leader or a hero, you know you want to do everything possible to be like your heroes. You want to impress them. You want to show them that you have what it takes and that they're right when they believe in you. And see, Kevin believed in me. He was a life breather, right? He saw more in me before I saw it in myself. That's what heroes do. And so I'm 22 years old, fresh out of college, and a few weeks into work for Kevin, we're sitting down at Panera. I still remember this. And at the table, he looks at me and he says, Matt, leaders are readers. So what are you reading? He was always challenging me in my faith, always challenging me to be a leader. Leaders are readers, so what are you reading? Now, I was an English major in college, so I'm like, I got this. This is going to be great. And I wanted to impress him with my answer. I wanted him to think like, yeah, he's going after it. This is going to be awesome. So I was a little bit surprised when his response wasn't what I thought it would be when I said, The Chronicles of Narnia. I don't know why you're laughing, but he didn't laugh. He kind of stood there puzzled. I think he wanted something a little more profound, but I figured four kids following a talking lion is quite profound. I don't know where you're missing this, Kevin. I don't understand. But now I'm sitting at the table in this awkward moment trying to get out of it, and I was like, I know what I'll do. I'll trap him. I'll just rebound the question back to him. So I said, well, what are you reading? And of course, he reached down in his bag, picked out the book, and said this, and slid across the table. And I looked down at the book, and it's written by this theologian named A.W. Tozer. And it's called The Knowledge of the Holy. I'm like, you got Aslan. You got, man, like totally didn't match up. Totally missed the point. But I wanted to be like my leader. I wanted to be like my hero. And so I took the book, I opened it up, and in the very first line of the very first chapter on the very first page, this is what it said. It says, what comes into our minds when we think about God is the most important thing about us. Let me read it again just in case. What comes into our minds when we think about God is the most important thing about us. And I think my response back to Kevin when I read this was, ooh, that's good. But what I really thought was, ooh, what? It was totally over my head. So if you're missing this one, guess what? I did for a long time. But again, I wanted to be like my leader. I wanted to be like my hero. And so I actually memorized that statement. I memorized this quote from A.W. Tozer. What comes into our minds when we think about God is the most important thing about us. And over the years of marinating on this and trying to figure out how this is true in my own life, I started to come up with a question. A question started to emerge from the flip side of that statement. If what comes into our minds when we think about God is the most important thing about us, then I started to wonder, what comes into God's mind when he thinks about us? Let me say it one more time so you don't miss it. What comes into God's mind when he thinks about us? The most important thing about us is what comes into our minds when we think about God. Well, what comes into his mind when he thinks about us? Now listen, you don't have to be a Tozer groupie to figure this one out. Because I would imagine that most of us in the room have probably thought this question before. How does God actually view us? What is it that comes into God's mind when he thinks about us? Does he believe in us? Other people believe in us. Kevin believed in me. Does God really believe in me? Does he really think I have what it takes? Somewhere inside of me, does God really think that I can be a hero? And if you're anything like me, you start to ask these questions, but the answers that come to your mind are drawn from the memories of your past. You start to think back on your story. Well, what have I done that would make me to be a hero? What have I done that could maybe potentially qualify me to be a hero? And the problem is, as I think through my past, I start to think through the things I've done and the people that I've met and the places that I've been. And then I start to think about the mistakes that I've made and the failures that I have and the moments I wasn't super proud of. And instead of heroic things coming into God's mind, when I think about what God thinks of me, typically they look more like this. They look more like the word failure. I struggle with this a lot. I struggle with this idea of failing. A failing God, a failing others. Maybe you think that God views you because of your past as a failure. Or maybe it's not that. Maybe it's the word unworthy. Maybe you think there's just no possible way that I could deserve this. That I'm unworthy of it. Or maybe it's not that. Maybe it's a fun one, guilty. Nope, not fun. But all of us know what this feels like. That time you mess up, that time you did something that you weren't supposed to do and you just feel guilty, so God must think that you're guilty as well. And maybe it's not that. Maybe it's the one that's even worse. Maybe it's the word damaged. Whether it was from your own doing or someone else to you, you just feel like I'm not whole anymore. The dream I once had is now dissipated and I'm just damaged. God must view me like this. Now, I could keep listing words here of how we might think, but I don't want us to all be sad pandas because this isn't fun. We don't like these words. And the problem is that we start to think these and associate this with God's thought of us. And really, if I could take all the words and boil them down into one, it'd be this: disqualified. And if you want to ask me, I think this is the worst possible thing. Because when you're disqualified, it's not like you failed. It means you're done. Right? When you fail, it means you might get a second chance. It means you might get to run the race again. Pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and go one more time. It might mean you get to take the field again. But when you're disqualified, it doesn't mean that you get to ever do it again. It means you're out. It means you're done. It means that's it. And the problem is that heroes can't be disqualified. So when we start to think that God might view us as disqualified, automatically we disqualify ourselves from thinking we can be a hero. But is this really how God views us? When you feel disqualified and you associate it to your faith, you probably think there's no way I can be a hero. If anything, I feel more like the villain. So when you feel disqualified, what do? Does that really mean you're done? Does that really mean you have no hope? If you walked in here today feeling disqualified, does that mean that's it? And luckily and thankfully for us, there's a guy in the Bible who is considered a hero in the Christian faith. And yet when you look into his story, and especially when you look into his past, you will see that there may not have been anybody else who could ever have felt more disqualified than him. And yet somehow he still became a hero. I think we can learn from him. And I think there's something that he can show us about how in the world we can still be heroes, even if we feel disqualified. And we're going to look at it in the book of Matthew, chapter 9. We're going to see this guy show up. Now, a little context before we jump into the text, because the text is super exciting. But you need to know a little bit that's happening beforehand. So Jesus is walking around from town to town, going and doing these incredible things. He's going and meeting people. He's trying to get in all his 10,000 steps every day. He is telling everyone in the world how wonderful life is. He's showing them kindness. He's performing miracles, and he's showing them that God loves them. So now he's on his way to the next town. Next day, another 10,000. And on his way, he passes somebody, and he has an interaction. And this is where our hero shows up. Take a look at Matthew chapter 9, verse 9. As Jesus went on from there, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax collector's booth. Now we got to pause. This little dot, 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 it'd be easy to breeze past, but there's something profound here. There's something profound we can't miss. Is that our hero has the best possible name ever. I'm just saying. No, that's not what we're talking about, but it is a good one. No, what we need to see is that in this statement, in this verse, we see why Matthew was disqualified. It's sitting right here, and we may breeze by it forever. It's his profession. See, Matthew would have been disqualified because of who he was. He saw a man named Matthew sitting at a tax collector's booth. So why in the world would a tax collector be disqualified? Well, let me give you a little historical context. So the Jews at this time, Matthew was one of them, they were under the Roman rule. So the Romans ruled everything. The Jews are living underneath their rule. And because they lived inside this kingdom under their rule, the Romans would actually levy taxes on everybody that lived in their kingdom. And so the tax collectors would have to go and collect the taxes from the people for the Romans. They were like a walking one-man IRS. And just like the IRS, nobody liked them. And so everyone would avoid this guy named Matthew. But they weren't just tax collectors. Here's why they were even worse. Because the Romans would state a certain amount that they had to give in taxes, but then the tax collectors would go and charge even more on top and keep it for themselves. So they're not really tax collectors, they're really thieves. And Matthew was the worst of them because he was a Jew himself. So all the Jews are having to pay taxes and Matthew's collecting it from them, but he's charging over the top to all the Jews. So not only is he a thief, but now he's a traitor. And to his people, he's the absolute worst possible type of person. We actually see this to be true. And Jesus shows us when he talks about the way that the Pharisees would pray. Now, the Pharisees were kind of the leaders of the Jewish culture. They were the religious zealots. Whatever they said was right, everyone else had to subscribe to it being right. Whatever they said was wrong, everyone else had to say, okay, I guess that's wrong. And so Jesus in Luke chapter 18 shows us how Pharisees pray. And it shows us exactly what would have happened for the tax collector. Take a look at this. Jesus said, the Pharisee stood by himself and prayed, God, I thank you. So pompous. God, I thank you that I'm not like these other people, these robbers and evil doers and adulterers, or even like this tax collector. So not only like these bad things, but it's a special designation of how bad a tax collector is. The Pharisee was praying that he wouldn't be like Matthew. Now we also need to pause. This is not how you pray. Let's just make sure we get this right. Don't go and write this down. Oh, that's a good one. No, Jesus is saying, don't pray like this. The Pharisees actually became the enemies of Jesus because they prayed like this. But what it shows us is how the society would have viewed Matthew. If anybody ever would have been able to say that they were disqualified, it would have been Matthew. But thankfully, that's not the end of the verse. So let's go back to the beginning. Let's get rid of that dot, 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 and let's see what happens. Matthew 9, verse 9. As Jesus went on from there, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax collector's booth. "Follow me," he told him. And Matthew got up and followed him. "Follow me," he told him. And Matthew got up and followed him. He just got up and followed him. He left everything else behind, left his tax collector's booth there, and got up and followed Jesus. Now, when Jesus says, "Get up and follow me," you need to know he's not trying to walk to another town and saying, "Hey, why don't you come stroll with me? We'll get to the town. I'll buy you some Starbucks. You can get a venti. It's fine. It's on me. We'll just hang out for a little bit," right? He didn't take him to Chipotle and say, "You can add the guac. Fine. It's okay. I get it." No, when he's saying, "Come follow me," what Jesus is saying to Matthew is, "Listen, Matthew, I think you have what it takes. Matthew, I see something in you and I believe in you. Matthew, I know that you can be a hero." And to Matthew, it would have taken him aback that Jesus said, "Come follow me." Because see, Jesus was a rabbi or a teacher. And back in this culture, if a rabbi went to someone and said, "Come follow me," it was like a badge of honor. It's the best possible thing anybody could ever say to you. And so Matthew's feeling disqualified most likely. And then Jesus comes and says, "Come follow me." And it's this weird dichotomy of what to do. And I would imagine that for Matthew, he felt a little bit confused. Because see, for Matthew, he had all these voices telling him who he was. He had these voices saying, "You're disqualified. You're a failure. You're definitely unworthy. Yeah, you should definitely feel guilty. You are overwhelmingly damaged, Matthew." And the problem is that even around Jesus, this would have been happening. So the first 8 chapters of Matthew, we see Jesus start to get some of his disciples around him. So guys like Andrew and James and John and Peter, they would have been there with Jesus. They would have been walking, getting their 10,000 steps with Jesus and see Jesus go over to this guy at a tax collector's booth. And they would have been like, whoa, Jesus, hang on. Listen, I know that you are incredible. Do you not know who that is? Are you not aware of what he's doing? He's not just chilling on the road. Don't you know what that little booth is? Don't you see him sitting in his pretentious little tax booth? You're going to go say, "Follow me," to him? I thought we were building a kingdom. I thought you needed influencers. I thought you needed heroes. Jesus, that guy's not a hero. He's a villain. He's the worst type of person. But when Jesus looked at Matthew, he didn't see any of that. See, when Jesus looked at Matthew, the words Matthew probably associated with himself and the words that everyone was saying about him go back to our list. I imagine that when Matthew was sitting there, he was probably saying, "Well, what comes into God's mind when he thinks about me is that I'm a failure." But Jesus comes along and he says, no, Matthew, you're not a failure. When I look at you, I see you as significant. Because I know the future that's in store for you, and I know you have what it takes. You are significant, Matthew. Matthew probably felt, and the world would have told him, that he was unworthy. But Jesus looked at him and said, "No, Matthew, you're not unworthy. You are worth it. You're worth everything that's happened in your life. You're worth everything that you will do. You are so worth loving, Matthew." Matthew probably would have felt guilty in this moment. Everybody would have been saying he's guilty, even the disciples. And yet what Jesus looked at him, he said, no, you're not guilty. Matthew, you're free. And through you, other people are going to know that they can be free as well. They would have said, "Matthew, you're damaged. Don't you know what your profession is?" But Jesus would say, "Nope, you're not damaged, Matthew, you're restored. That when you choose to follow me, you are restored. And as a result, the message that you give to everybody is going to be how they can be restored as well." See, I think when Jesus looked at Matthew, which also meant that it's how God looked at Matthew, he didn't see disqualified, he saw qualified. That's what he saw in Matthew. Jesus looked right at Matthew and he says, "It doesn't matter what you've done in the past. In spite of your past, in spite of your mistakes, in spite of everything you've ever done wrong that you may even regret, you're not disqualified, Matthew. You are qualified. You are qualified to receive God's love. You are qualified to follow me. Matthew, you are qualified to be a hero." And for Matthew, I imagine he had a lot of stuff in his mind that would have been telling him, "I just don't know." But what we saw in Matthew chapter 9, verse 9 is that he got up and he followed him. So you may be sitting here thinking, "That's great for Matthew. That's awesome. I'm so glad he was able to overcome those things. But I don't know that you quite understand what I've done. Maybe you walked in here and it is not a surprise that you feel disqualified. That word is something you've wrestled with for a while. Maybe even if you've been walking with Jesus and following him for a while, and right now you feel disqualified because of something that's happened. And what we have to understand is this truth of no matter what you've done, what we see through Matthew's story is he did one simple thing that allowed him to move on. He did one simple thing that allowed him to be a hero. All Matthew had to do was forget his past and follow Jesus. You want to be a hero? You forget your past and you follow Jesus, because heroes forget and follow. Heroes forget and follow. They forget the things they're holding on to. They forget the things that weigh them down. They forget the things that everybody would tell them they're disqualified for, and they begin to follow Jesus. And now you may ask again, that's awesome, but how? I don't understand how to get past all of it. How can I forget those things? Well, you flip the statement around, and there's your truth. Because not only do heroes forget and follow, but heroes follow to forget. Heroes follow to forget. And this truth, this stance, when you choose to do this, it changes everything. Because when you follow Jesus, what you're saying by definition is, I'm going to focus on you, Jesus. Rather than hearing all the words around me, rather than trying to associate what God may think of me with what everyone else thinks of me, now I'm going to look at who Jesus says I am. And when Jesus looks at you, and when he looks at Matthew, and when he looks at me and all of us, what he sees is you are qualified. Not that you're damaged, not that you're guilty, not that you're unworthy, not that you're a failure. No, he says, listen, you are free and you are exactly as I want you. Now, maybe the most beautiful part about this is that in order for Matthew to follow Jesus, and in order for Matthew to be qualified, he didn't have to do anything to get qualified on his own before he could follow Jesus. It's the best part about this story. Matthew didn't have to get qualified before he could follow Jesus. He just had to start following Jesus, and that would make him qualified. It's called grace. So in your life, what's holding you back from following Jesus? What's keeping you from hearing the things he would say of you? What's keeping you from understanding that the way he views you is not as disqualified, but as qualified? Qualified to receive his love. Qualified to follow Jesus, and qualified to be a hero. Maybe for some of you, it's the way that you view God. A lot of times we can think of God that if I've done this wrong, he must be against me. He can't be for me. But that beautiful part of grace is that when we understand how God really views us, when we understand the truth of God's character, we start to see that he will always love you no matter what. You are qualified, and you always will be, when you follow Jesus. And so on Father's Day, I think about my kids. I showed you a picture of them earlier. Here's a picture of my kids. Aren't they incredible? I heard some awes. You can totally do that. It is totally fine. They're wonderful. Why my son is trying to choke out my little daughter, I have no idea. We're working on that. We're trying to figure it out. No, but these are my kids. And I'm going to just go ahead and say, I'm far from a perfect parent. By no means. Like when my kids are super stubborn and they're really, really headstrong and really disobedient, and I have to tell them like 16 times not to do something, which might be part of the problem. I don't know why I said 16, but I shouldn't do it that many times. But whenever they don't do the right thing, my default reaction is not to be patient. It's not to be cool, calm, and collected. No, I parent out of emotion sometimes. I get super impatient and I get super angry. I've never been more angry in my life than when I became a parent. It's like God said, hey, Matt, here's three little creatures to show you just how selfish you are. Like, it's never in my world happened until now. I'm not a perfect dad. But what I want you to know is that every single one of us would probably say we're not perfect parents. And if you have a parent, but you're not a parent yet, you'd probably look at your parents and say, yeah, they're definitely not perfect. So this is the truth we can all live with. But I would imagine that the exact same thing of what I'm about to say is what you would feel as well. I love my kids. And no matter what they do, there's nothing they could ever do that would ever make me love them less, or not believe in them, or not want the best for them because they're my children. They can never do anything that will ever change my view of them. And so if I, as an impatient and imperfect father, would love my kids no matter what, then how much more does God, our perfect heavenly Father, love us? If I, as an impatient, imperfect father, would love my kids no matter what, how much more does God, our perfect heavenly Father, love us no matter what? So you might have walked in here thinking that you had that really bad mistake when you were in high school, or you were super rebellious when you were in college. Maybe the dreams that you held when you were upstreet, when you were in upstreet, have changed. And somewhere from upstreet to your seat, life happened. And no longer do you think you can be a hero because of what you've done, and your past has disqualified you. And so God must look at you like you're a failure, or like you've messed up, or you're too far gone. And I'm telling you right now that that's just not true. That God would do whatever it takes to be with you, because he loves you no matter what. And he already did everything he possibly could to be with you. It's why Jesus stepped down out of glory, out of heaven, and came to earth into this lowly form and lived a perfect life that we never could. So that about 30 years into it, 33 years in, he would give up his life and he'd die on the cross. He'll allow himself to go through the worst torture in human history and be crucified. So that 3 days later, he would raise from the dead and defeat death to make a way for us to be restored to God. So that whenever we follow him, we see we're not disqualified. Now we're qualified through the work of Jesus. It's why he came. He gave everything for you because he loves you. So if you ever feel like you are too far gone or you are too disqualified, remember that God doesn't view you as a villain. What comes into God's mind when he thinks about you is not that you're disqualified. It's not that you're a villain. What comes into God's mind when he thinks about you is that you are qualified. You, exactly as you are qualified to receive God's love. You are qualified to follow Jesus, and you are qualified to be a hero. No matter what you've done in your past, all you got to do is follow Jesus. And so today, my challenge for every single person in this room, every one of you, whether you came in here with a faith and you've already been following Jesus, or whether you came in here and you're just trying to figure this thing out, every one of us can do something that I think is going to help us remember how God views us. Back to that first question, what comes into God's mind when he thinks about us? You can remember that you are qualified by going home, and I want you to go to your mirror in your bathroom, and I want you to write on your mirror with a dry erase marker, with a sticky note, with something, I want you to write, I am qualified. Because when you wake up every day, that's normally the first place that you see yourself. And so the first time that you see yourself this week, I want you to see you as God sees you, not just how you may see you. I want you to write, I am qualified. And for those of you in the room that would say, well, you've realized that you were qualified a while ago. You've been following Jesus, but you just need to remember how he views you. Then what you need to do is you need to write, I am still qualified. You may have a bad day. You may have a bad week. Things may not have gone well, and it may all be calamity. You may end up in your seat right now in a place you never thought you were. But even after that, you are still qualified. So you just need to write, I am still qualified. You are still qualified to be that parent to those kids. You are still qualified to have that job. You are still qualified to receive God's love. You are still qualified to follow Jesus. And you are still qualified to be a hero. That's my challenge for everybody here. And my prayer for those of you who have never done this before, and maybe this is the first time you've ever felt like, you know what, I want that. Last week, Andy Stanley said, when we follow Jesus, it gives us a better life, but it also makes us better at life. And isn't that what we want? A better life? Well, if you want that, my prayer for you is that you would pray something like, Jesus, I'm done with my past. I want the life that only you can offer me. Help me every day to follow you. It's that simple. Jesus, I'm done with my past. I'm forgetting my past. I want the life that only you can offer me. So help me every day follow you. Because what Matthew teaches us is that no one is too disqualified to receive God's love. No one is too disqualified to follow Jesus. And no one is too disqualified to be a hero. Matthew would become one of the greatest influences on the people that hated him the most, on the Jews. Matthew would become one of the 12 disciples. Matthew would become the writer of the book of Matthew, one of the four gospels in the Bible. And generation after generation after generation would say, he is a hero. All because he chose to forget his past and follow Jesus. Because that's what heroes do. Heroes forget and follow. Can I pray for y'all? Let me pray for you. Father, I'm so grateful for stories like Matthew. I'm so grateful for stories of grace. This reality of we don't have to qualify ourselves before we can receive you. You just say, come to us. Just go ahead and come to me and then I'll qualify you, God. I thank you that that exists as an opportunity for everybody here. Father, I thank you that our past doesn't have to define us. That we don't have to be identified as someone who's been disqualified. God, I thank you that you say, come as you are, not come if you are. Because the what comes into your mind when you view us is that we are your children and you would do whatever it takes for us and you love us no matter what. So God, I'm grateful. I'm thankful. And my prayer is that every single person under my voice right now would be able to make that a truth within their heart. That they would go into this week having the courage to follow you. They'd go into this week having the courage to forget their past and to follow you. Because only you can give life and you give the best possible life. So God, thank you. Be glorified through us. And it's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen. So next week, we will have week 4 of our hero series with Gavin Adams, our lead pastor here. Have a happy and wonderful Father's Day to all the dads in the room. Tell your dad happy Father's Day, and we'll see you here next week.